Forensic Forecast is brought to you by Digital Forensics Magazine at digitalforensicsmagazine.com and by Disc Labs. Find out more about our services at disclabs.com. Hi, welcome to Forensic Forecast. I'm Lee, and joining me this week, as always, we have Eric. How are you doing, Eric?
Hello. Very good.
Excellent. And also joining us this week for our very special episode, we have Steve Salinas. How are you doing, Steve?
Very good.
Awesome. Hello. And we also have Ashley Stockdale. How are you doing, Ashley?
Great, thank you.
Excellent. And both Ashley and Steve are from Guidance Software, and they've come on today to discuss Encase version 7, which is coming out soon-ish, we believe, but we don't know the exact date when. It's still unconfirmed, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
But it's still not stopping us from ploughing ahead and trying to establish what goodies are going to be involved in this next version. So, anybody, I don't know which one of you wants to give an introduction as to what kind of stuff we can look forward to in the new one, what kind of things have changed, or
sure. Well, you know what? Let me. I can take that introduction part, and then just to kind of let you know how we're organized. I'm the product marketing manager, so I'm out and on the road a lot. We started our version 7 sneak peek meetings a little over a month ago, so I'm doing a lot of those. Ashley's doing those as well. Ashley is the technical product manager, so she'll be able to answer and kind of talk about all the technical changes in the new release. But just to kind of give you an idea of where we're coming from, version 6, the initial release of version 6 was in December of 2006. We've had 18 different releases since then.
Wow.
And that was surprising. But, you know, and we've had lots of releases, added a lot of functionality. I mean, you could have broken up all of those releases into probably a couple of major releases. But so we've been working on version 7, and really there's been obviously quite a bit of feedback from the community about what they'd like to see in the next major release. And so our objective really with the release is to address a lot of those requests and overall make the product easier to use. So what we hear a lot from the different users of Encase is they're looking for ways to increase their efficiency. You know, everyone is just slammed with cases. The amount of information that's in the case, the evidence is just growing exponentially. So what we did is we've really tried to address that by adding some automation, some different ways you can automate different processes within Encase, and then taking a look at the interface, the user interface, and making some nice changes there. I mean, when I look at it as a whole, as I'm talking with people and kind of sharing all of the new advancements and changes in the software, it's really about a new approach. Now, we are taking a new approach to how people can navigate through the product, how people can prepare their evidence for their investigation, how you can search, and we've really made some nice changes in regards to email. We've added some cool features around smartphones and tablets, how you can acquire them in Encase, and taken a new look and made some changes as far as how inscripts are used in the product and how we manage the evidence associated with the case generally. So those are kind of the high level items that we're addressing, and we can, Ashley can talk about the technical details as we go here. But generally the idea, again, make it simple to use, but the other thing that we want to make sure we didn't do was remove any of those capabilities that allowed our users to do the real deep forensic analysis. Because I think that's one of our strong points, is that we allow the users of Encase to really dig in and do some very, very advanced analysis against the evidence. So that's kind of the overview of what Encase version 7 is going to be, or is, I should say.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned one of the things which came out there as you were talking was the user interface has changed. I know you posted something on Facebook about this. I can't remember if it was, I think it was last week you posted it. Is this going to be like a complete redesign? Are we going to actually recognize Encase when we open it in version 7, or is it going to be something a bit different, a bit new?
I think there's going to be a combination of the two. I think when you first get in, we're going to provide some guidance on how to find functionality, pardon the pun, guidance. Previously, it was kind of difficult to find the functions you were looking for. They were sort of more sprinkled throughout the interface. We've done a really cognizant job of trying to place things where they're going to be needed. So you might find some things moved around a bit, as well as we've incorporated kind of a web browser-like tab navigation. So you have the nomenclature of forward and back, or a history tab of the things that you visited. So you kind of have a breadcrumb through as you need to come back to find what you were looking for. So definitely the forward and back will look different, and you're going to have more assistance in finding the functionality that you need, you know, putting those things in front of your face, definitely streamlining the number of tabs that we have. I don't know if you guys have ever dug in and you're down in snapshots and you've gone into process ID, and at this point you now have, you know, four levels of tabs deep with, you know, three or four wide, and it's very easy to get lost in that sort of methodology. And so we've really flattened out the level of tabbiness, however you want to state that, and really looked at how we can make it intuitive to find the functions that you're looking for. But there's still going to be the views that'll look familiar to you, like when you're browsing files, that'll look more familiar. We've done a lot of enhancements around how you view email. So specifically making things look more like how you would see them in the application themselves. For email, people are used to Outlook. You know, you want to have it view with, you know, maybe the full email on the right-hand side with your headers specified, just like you would see them in Outlook, your to, your from, your sent. You know, we want the application to look much more familiar to you. So even if it doesn't look like EnCase, it should look like either a tool you're used to using, you know, web browser, Outlook, or it should be pretty simple to you find what you're looking for there. So, you know, we kind of sampled from some of the common tools that we knew everyone was familiar with, and then really tried to logically arrange where we move some of the pieces with the new interface.
Very nice. Now, you mentioned about email and everything, and Guidance have made quite a significant step into the e-discovery side of things in the last couple of years. Has the email processing side of EnCase version 7 had anything to do with the e-discovery stuff, or have you been working on that completely independently of them?
So one of the things that we've done on the forensic side of the house is really to leverage what the e-discovery team has worked on. So we added to our e-discovery suite about a year ago, I think, the ability to do email threading and related emails. So email threading is the concept of using the message ID or a conversation ID to find the entire conversation related to an email. So even if the subject changes, in most common email formats, you'll be able to rebuild the conversation, including if there's missing messages, you can kind of see in that train which ones you're missing in your evidence set. So that sort of relationship building we developed on our e-discovery product, and we've gone ahead and embedded that into our forensic products. So we really want, you know, I know the comment has come up about, you know, us focusing on e-discovery the last couple of years, and that's very true. You know, we rebuilt the index engine for e-discovery version 3, and so the e-discovery platform got that, and they got the email threading. But now both of those items that have been vetted and tested on e-discovery are now being embedded into our forensic product. So you're going to see the brand new indexing engine. You're going to see, that's really geared towards email for forensic purposes. You're going to see our email threading, our related emails, as well as some email deduplication. We really looked at what true deduplication means. And, you know, while there's no hard, fast, perfect solution for deduplication, we've taken what we've done for our e-discovery product and put the deduplication into the email conversations and related emails, still preserving for forensic users, you know, of course, every copy of the email. There's no, you know, hiding pieces because they're duplicates, but definitely allowing you to see a deduplicated view of email.
Fantastic. So the indexing engine, are you able to talk a little bit more about that and about what we can expect to see in regards to that. I know that NK's 5, I believe it was, Guidance started to implement some indexing, and I don't think many people have really gotten into it and used it a great deal. So what are you going to do to show them exactly what it's capable of this time?
So as I mentioned, we actually rebuilt our entire indexing engine for our eDiscovery product. So it's been in use and in production for our eDiscovery solution, which deals with very large data sets of actual word data. You know, there is a difference when you're indexing a computer, whether it has, you know, a bunch of unallocated space or really word dense data on it. And so, you know, we put this indexing engine through the paces with eDiscovery, testing it on, you know, basically all the documents in Wikipedia or, you know, really large, dense word sets to make sure that it's scaled to large data sizes. And it's not a, it's our own proprietary database backend. So it's not using any other third-party indexing engine. And the reason we went that route is because we wanted to optimize for some of the forensic functions that we needed, prefix and suffix searches and, you know, Southeast Asian languages. Those are tools that, you know, English-based search indexing engines don't necessarily handle as well. Or even for fields where you want to test existence, that's not something that a typical indexing engine is optimized for. And that's something that we wanted to make sure to handle, especially for things like email. You want to know if an attachment exists. So it is a database-like file format that's held on the disk that we've developed, and we've spent a lot of time testing it and looking at its performance, and memory usage is clearly a key concern when it comes to indexing. We get a lot of questions about hardware requirements for version 7, and in specific regarding to indexing. So definitely when you're looking at indexing, it's not the processor power that's the bottleneck. It's going to be your memory utilization followed by, I/O. So any solid state disk would improve your indexing performance. But we've looked at, you know, does it make sense to have it spawned off to another machine? Or are you really looking at, limitations based on a single use memory usage? So, we will be producing a recommended guideline for memory usage for machines that are going to be doing indexing. But once the case is indexed, there's not anything that's close to using that level of memory with some of the restructuring we've done. We've really tried to reduce the need for memory while using NCASE. When you used to look at PSTs, every PST you open got held in memory. We've moved away from that model.
Yay.
Yes. Learned our lesson there. And to be scalable, you really need to utilize disk space. So V7 is going to definitely store more files on disk. You're going to see that with the index. You're going to see that with us automatically behind the scenes generating lefts of compound documents like email, registry files, PSTs, zips. Instead of actually storing those in memory, all of those will get cached out to the system and associated with your case. It's definitely a seamless process. You shouldn't see it. But then we've built in the ability to then associate those lefts and other device caches back. So you should see much less memory utilization once the case is processed and you've kind of put all those pieces in. But definitely during indexing, that's when we're going to be utilizing the most memory. I know, a couple different numbers have been floating around. We haven't made an official recommendation of how many gigs of RAM we're recommending. I know we've tested using 4, 8, 12, and we know all of those, they all work, but it's kind of a matter of what is an acceptable level of performance for you. Do you get in a case and can leave it overnight, or do you get in a case and you need answers really quickly? When indexing, you can still do other functionality on the system. We haven't made it so that processing is required. So you could still be doing triage-y type activities while it's indexing. But definitely the spec that you're going to want for your computer is really going to be dependent on when you're indexing, how quick you need that results back. we don't require 12 gigs or 16 gigs of memory, but it's definitely, you know, you're going to get your results back faster based on the amount of memory that you have available.
I take it then you're going to recommend that people are running a 64-bit operating system.
64-bit certainly helps. I don't have hard numbers yet on exactly the comparison. We're running those tests right now, and we will, you know, share those with users so that they can make a really educated guess as to what the best system will be for them.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So the other thing about the index is we really are moving towards allowing you to index all of the artifacts that you process from your case. So I keep touching on processing, and if you don't mind, I'd like to go into what I mean by that really quickly.
That's fine, yeah.
All right. So the idea of processing your evidence is not something new. I know many organizations have a, you know, set of steps that they run. And in version 6, you kind of had to pick from a bunch of different menus to get these things together, you know, run your recover folders, your signature analysis, your hashing. So that is all part of processing. And definitely, as we work with email, you'll choose to do your email threading during processing. But we've combined all of that functionality into one interface, the evidence processor, that you can choose to run at any point during your case, whether you want to do that up front or whether you want to go ahead and start investigating and then run the processor. And it really allows you to select a lot of options, the last of which is going to be indexing your case. Included in the processor is going to be our NScript modules. So we've done a complete rewrite of all of the NScript modules that you're familiar with. So I know people are familiar with Windows Initialize Case and Mac Initialize Case, and we've gone ahead and updated those to definitely support the latest artifacts. So you're going to see Windows 7 support and new Mac support included in those modules. But we've also combined them with our processor, so you can choose to run them together, and the results of that will be indexed as well. So what you get from this is not only are you able to process everything up front, but now since everything's indexed, you're able to build relationships between the different artifacts. So if you find, say, a picture of interest on your machine, using the index, you can find related items maybe by time. So you find a picture and you see that it was downloaded or last written or first written at a specific time. You could, using the index, say, find related items around maybe 5 minutes of when this item was downloaded, or find the name of this file somewhere else on the system. See if you could tell where in internet history it was gathered from. So we really are leveraging the index to build relationships between not just files or emails, but any artifact we parse out of the NScript modules. In addition, people can write their own NScript modules for the parser. So at CEIC, we're going to be holding a few classes on how to do that. We're also going to produce some documentation on how you can move your scripts from version 6 to version 7 if you want to do that and put them into this new processing framework. And the advantage of putting them in the processor is, again, everything will be indexed. So even if a user writes their own NScript, say to do prefetch, they could go ahead and have those results be indexed as well. And then when you're doing index searches, words within those artifacts will also return with the results.
Fantastic. Okay, well, what other specific things have been built into NK7 that perhaps people have requested? Like, have you ever? I know that all the time people on the NCASE boards on the guidance website saying, have you thought about adding this feature? Have you thought about adding this? Have you thought about adding this? Is there anything specifically which you've taken on board from users of NCASE and thought, right, well, we've heard your cries of anguish. Here you go. Here's that specific feature you've wanted.
Yes. So there are definitely several categories of those type of enhancements. So with 701, my goal was to get any of the features that would require architectural changes in. You know, we don't want to change our hash file format later. So SHA-1 hashing will be supported in version 701. As well as our evidence file format is going to be, there's going to be a new version out in version 701 that allows actual in-place encryption. So the data sectors themselves will be encrypted with AES 256. And that's going to have, an impact on our evidence file format. We're going to call that the EX01 format. So if you're familiar with ZipX or DocX, we kind of went with that same sort of nomenclature. And so you're going to see a new file format there to support better levels of encryption as well as better levels of compression. We will publish the spec for the new evidence file format. So for those interested in
that was one of my questions, whether you guys were going to open source the, are you going to open source all of the expert witness format at this point, the logical and the EO1, or just portions of it?
So we are only going to produce the spec for the EX01. We, at this point, are not going to produce the spec for the LX01. And we're not going to go back and actually post-document E01 at this point. So we will do EX01. That'll be available at this point. That's going to be the plan. It should be coming out right around the time that version 7 comes out, the document for that. So that's not available yet, but it will certainly be posted in a place that other vendors are welcome to have access to it. Of course, our Tableau products will also implement being able to produce the EX01 format shortly. So that is on the roadmap.
Also, so for updating firmware, for example, in like the TD1 and stuff, will you be able to do?
Yes. So I'm not exactly sure which versions of the Tableau devices will be updated for the EX01. I have to talk with Rob, who's our, former owner of Tableau, still Tableau forensic business unit guy. So he, we're working out those details internally right now, working with their development team to see which of the devices are going to go ahead and support that EX01 format.
Phenomenal.
So, and then we have a lot of requests for kind of specific artifacts that we still need to be updating for. So, I mentioned earlier the prefetch files. Dominic has a great NScript that handles doing some prefetch. That'll likely come in a point release. We have some of these more non-architectural changes that are going to be coming in, as well as encryption support. So in 701, we plan on supporting Checkpoint for Windows. So that's going to be coming out. Checkpoint PointSec is the same whole disk encryption product. But then we're going to have in point releases, we'll continue to keep up with our encryption products. So we're going to be adding Sophos Enterprise encryption to our list, continuing to support McAfee Endpoint, Semantic Endpoint, some enhancements to Credent to allow actually deleted file decryption. We're working directly with that vendor for having a little tighter integration there. And then Checkpoint for Mac is on the list. So all of those are going to be coming up shortly. And then, just continuing to look at artifacts like volume shadow copy. I know that was a question I've seen on the message boards quite a bit. Mounting a single volume shadow copy is actually fairly straightforward. The finesse or the real investigative value, though, is sort of stringing together multiple volume shadow copies to kind of get a more comprehensive picture of maybe a snapshot in time.
Yes.
And that's definitely one that we're investigating because we want to present it in a really useful manner as opposed to just, sequential volume shadow copies, which doesn't link them tight enough to be valuable in my experience. So we're definitely working with users to get a sense for how they want to see those timelines of volume shadow copies. So you can definitely look to see that in the short term. It's something that we're working on actively right now and how best to handle those. But those are just a sample. Definitely we focused on 701, the big impact architectural changes. Let's make hash sets more scalable using a different database format on disk. We're not using things like SQLite because we actually found they weren't as scalable as using our format. Okay. But we went ahead and we built this one sort of database-like structure. I'm not going to call out all the technical details of it, but we've reused it in multiple ways. We used it for the index, we used it for hashing, we used it for tagging, which is a great new feature in 7. The ability to tag, you can have up to 63 tags per case. And having the ability to mark files, hey, you know, I want to review this later. Oh, this is important. This is, you know, kind of notes to the investigator as they work through the case that are then able to be viewed either together or as you're browsing entries. They kind of show up in all of your different views. And so I think, you know, having those architectural backends in 701 allows us in things like 702 and 703 to really expand their use across the platform.
Superb. Yeah, that was one of the questions which I know that a lot of people asked was previously about encryption. I know that previous versions of Encase, if you provide certain credentials, it can go in, it can crack some of the encryption. Has there been any improvement towards actually breaking encryption or cracking it to get into certain things, or do you still have to go back to the suspect, so to speak, and get the relevant information from them?
So we are working on partnering with a vendor to look at doing some of that sort of cracking, or however you want to, you know, brute force encryption type of thing. So we'll be able to announce more about that at CIC. But for now, I can, you know, let you know that, yes, we are working with vendors who provide that sort of service. So, yeah.
Okay. Cool stuff.
Yeah.
Eric, I think you got a couple of questions.
Yes. so the user interface, you know, back when I did a lot of guidance training, you know, one of the mantras during the training is everything cool is a right click. You
go on some the right click, cowboys.
Right click. Yeah, and that, which is fine. You know, that's what I grew up with. You know, I started with Encase version 3, so it's fine with me. Is that still going to be the case, or are we looking at something so radically different where it's not so much the right click anymore?
So we know that we've pretty much trained our users to use the right click. So taking things out of the right click doesn't seem to necessarily help them, because now that's where they're going to default look. But for users who haven't used Encase before, the functionality that you commonly use on, say, a table, a lot of that now has buttons available with clearer names, more intuitive names, like export for copy files and copy and erase. Those are kind of held on a button. You know, trying to really call out kind of the day-to-day working items. Still on the right click, you're going to find maybe some more of the advanced functionality. The right click hasn't gone away, but we've definitely simplified what's there and tried to group it more logically. I know at some point we were doing it alphabetically. That didn't help me very much. So we tried to at least group the functionality, related functionality together, so that even for users who aren't familiar with Encase, at least they kind of knew the section to go to. But we did try and simplify the amount of options on the right click, so that it wasn't so, you know, go 3/4 the way down the screen to the 26th item sort of instruction.
What about reporting? Are we going to see anything different on the reporting function?
Yes, thank you. I totally forgot.
That's all part of the service. That's what we're here for.
Thanks. So in version 6, and actually most previous versions, you were very limited in the amount of formatting options that you had. So swinging into the other direction, we are still going to allow you, we're still going to base reports off of bookmarks, but we've separated the formatting from the actual data that is going to be provided in the report. So how this looks in version 7 is that you're going to have report templates. We will ship with a couple default report templates, and when the preview comes out, there'll be a sample of that for you guys to start to get a feel for it. That really allows you a lot of customization in the template. So, you know, you can create, we're calling them case information items. So if you want to embed your agency or your address or your organization, your investigator, the date the report was created, you have one place to kind of specify the metadata about that report. And then you also have your bookmarks that have the actual data that you found relevant. So maybe you have a folder for pictures and a folder for relevant Word documents, a folder for internet history. What we do then is we point to those items with a template. And in the template, you can say, okay, I want to have a title page. And I want to go ahead and pull from my case information, you know, the investigator's name, the case number. And you can go ahead and just picking from those items, you can embed them into the report. You can have the title page. We've a lot of customization with header and footer. You can have a title page that doesn't have a header and footer, but the rest of the document has headers and footers. Any option that you can think of that you probably have as part of, you know, standard Word functionality for alignment and styles, you know, creating headings and titles, that's all been extracted out into the template. And then as you bookmark things, we just reference the folder. So in this section, go ahead and put all these pictures. In this section, put all the documents. And that way, once you have your template in place, you kind of can just work your case by placing the bookmarks into the folders, and then they'll show up automatically in the report in the format that you've spent time setting up in the first place.
Okay.
So we don't expect everyone to be report template makers. So we're going to provide some that you can kind of just edit. You know, there's a way to kind of just say, oh, exclude this section. I don't use it for my specific case. Or, you know, you can kind of share templates with others. We will have a class at CIC on how to create report templates. Ken Basor is actually going to be teaching that, and I'm going to be helping out. We have a lot of labs at CIC actually to help people have some training on version 7 even before it's released.
So, So the report templates, are they going to be XML, HTML based, or you're not able to say anything about that at the moment?
No, actually I can. So we looked at XML and HTML, and XML was a little too heavyweight. It's familiar, but it was very difficult to manage once you started getting all the formatting into the XML. And then we looked at HTML, which unfortunately was too little. We even looked at EnScript, which we scrapped as that can live as its own thing and is more complicated than what people need for this. So it is a pseudo language. So when you look at it, it looks a little programmery, but not so much as EnScript. It's more VB-esque, or even it looks more like a lightweight HTML. And so the templates are transferable. We'll have a way to export and share templates. So when you share a template, it shares not only the template, but the folders that you reference, so that you can build that structure and then share it with someone else. And every time you open a case, you know, you already have the structure. You just need to place the bookmarks in the proper folders.
Oh, superb.
So if you know HTML, will this look pretty familiar to you?
It'll look pretty familiar. You're going to see things like par and page break and things like that. There are a lot of advanced options that you, when you add them, we'll be able to do different things with tables than, say, HTML could do. And so it'll look slightly different, but some of it will look familiar, yes.
So your decryption drivers, like for Safeboot, for example, I like to use the 64-bit version of NCase, obviously. But when I have to do a decryption through Safeboot, I have to use 32-bit because my understanding is the Safeboot people have never really done. It's not your fault. It's they haven't provided 64-bit drivers. Is that going to change? I mean, do you have enough leverage where you can lean on these vendors and say, hey, give us a 64-bit version, or are you still pretty much at their mercy?
Most of the vendors have been leaned heavily upon to have 64-bit drivers. I don't think it needs to just be us. So I'm seeing most of them starting to bring in 64-bit drivers. We're working with them to make sure that they're stable enough for us to start to use. But most of them have kind of seen the light, and you know, 64-bit is not obscure by any means at this point. It's very common. So I don't think, you know, by the end of this year or maybe even mid next year, there's going to be any that don't have a 64-bit driver. So
that leads me to my next question, which is more of a philosophical one. I think in the forensics community, we're almost done with the 32-bit era as far as our host operating systems, just because our tools are more advanced and just using 3 gigs of memory is just painful. Are you at Guidance? I don't want to put you too much on the spot, but Are you sort of heading in the same direction where at some point in the future you will envision not having a 32-bit forensic edition? Obviously, you're going to have it this version, but do you think the writing's on the wall as far as forensic tools?
I think, yes, that will happen. I don't think that's going to happen in our version 7 sequence. I think, you know, we understand that not everyone has the luxury of upgrading their hardware equipment because their software decides to drop support for something. So it doesn't necessarily right now inhibit us from having the 32-bit. So we'll definitely carry that through the 7 sequence. Will it function better? And will we at some point probably recommend the 64-bit for handling certain types of cases? Absolutely. I mean, there's just a certain scale of data that you're going to want.
Yeah, we're hitting that point, I think.
Yeah, the terabytes of data issue. You know, being realistic, at some point you're going to need a beefier machine.
Memory. Yep. So, all right, is it correct to assume that if you wrote a custom end script that you really like for version 6, that it sounds like it's going to break in version 7, and you're going to have to update it? Is that what something developers should just plan on?
Yes, that is what they should plan on, but we're going to provide you a bunch of tools to help you migrate, including an analysis script. So you'll basically point this script at your script, and we'll go through and say, hey, you need to replace this function call with this new function call.
Oh, nice. That's great.
Yeah, or, you know, this isn't supported, or this is supported now, but there's a better way to do it. We're building that analysis script right now because we know you put a lot of work into a script and you want it to be supported going forward. Right. One of the things that we're trying to move people to is actually writing their end scripts to work within the processor, because that framework that we're building, we're going to keep very stable. So, you know, version to version, you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, is this going to compile? As long as it's built for working inside of our framework, those are the APIs that we're going to keep really stable. We'll continue to add APIs for end script, but we exposed so much more functionality to EnScript in version 7. Our evidence processor is actually written in EnScript. And so all of those features I talked about, signature analysis, hashing, mounting email, email threading, indexing, are all available through EnScript, including recover folders. So all of that functionality is now available for you guys to customize your scripts to, plug them into the processor. And then in addition, the processor can run with a template. So you could set up, hey, always run all this stuff. You can run the template from a command line. So you give it an evidence file, you give it a template, and it goes ahead and just, you know, basically processes it, and it's ready to sit there and add to a case when you're complete. So we want people to be focusing their intention on writing end scripts for the processor. We're going to provide a lot of documentation on how to do that, and we're going to provide a lot of analysis script help to help you find areas that need to be updated from 6 to 7 and give you a really educated guess at how to go ahead and modify that.
Good. So, all right, memory usage. Now, I know you're talking about putting more, basically the complaint, I guess, the scalability with NCASE has always been, at some point you can't stuff all the stuff in memory, and I think that's where a lot of us are at, and it sounds like you guys recognize that, you're changing it, great. And based on what you've said before, I want to run you through a scenario and see if I have it right, which is I've got my case open. Let's say I want to examine a registry file, an ntuser.dat. So I would go to it, right-click it, mount it. However, it sounds like what will happen now is, will a logical evidence file automatically be made with that parsed data and then entered, it will go on the disk. And then when I close and open up my case again, it's just going to access that logical evidence file, open up my ntuser.dat, and I'm ready to roll with it?
Precisely.
Excellent.
So not only for mounted files, but we're also going to cache up your actual top-level evidence files parsed structure. So when you, right now, at a really large NTFS system, sometimes you get parsing MFT for quite a while.
Yeah.
We'll only do that once. We'll go ahead and cache out the all of the parsed disk, and then we'll be able to – we do that for two reasons. One, because then when you reopen a case, we don't have to parse again. It's available instantly. But the second is every entry, whether it's in a record, email, internet history, or it's a file entry in your operating system, is going to get a unique identifier in version 7. If you guys are familiar with blue checking or bookmarking a deleted overwritten file, and then suddenly when you close and reopen your case, it's now pointing to a file that's allocated and not the same name. Yes. It's because in version 6, everything resolved by sector offset. So when you had to read it over, deleted overwritten files, and you had an allocated file in the same area, we weren't able to uniquely resolve back to the item. So with this new paradigm of having disk cache for entries and logical evidence files for any of the parsed data, we have unique identifiers for every single item, and we're able to resolve some of those longstanding issues that we know are really troublesome for users when you're doing bookmarking and now tagging. So we should see some improvements there as well.
That's fantastic.
Okay, and then I got a question on, I think I know the answer to this. $ file name. Will you guys allow us to see that in a column view? Because most forensic tools, some do, some don't. And it would be really helpful if I could see, because you, when you guys parse the MFT, you know, and for an NTFS file system, you know, the modified access to everything, you're getting it from the standard information time values, and that's great. But because of all the anti-forensic stuff that people are concerned about and other things, $ file name is very helpful. Is there anything on the roadmap getting us those $ file names in column form where we could easily see them as we're going through the file system?
So we've done, the shorter answer is I'm not exactly sure yet, but I'm trying to see if we could get there from what I know is in 701 right now. Okay. In 701, for all of that extra field information that you would get, additional metadata that right now isn't in entries, you know, in the show columns list. Do you guys remember more when you'd have like details, the column, and you'd have to go over there to the Boolean, select it, and then down below you magically got more information?
Yeah.
So what we've done is instead of having it be magic, we go ahead and we have in the bottom pane a fields tab that has all that information that's always available. So you don't have to scroll over to some magic column to see it. So $ field name is something that I believe would fall into that category of being a field. It'd be another piece of metadata associated with the entry, and it would probably right now show up down there in that fields area.
Okay.
Right now, I don't think we have the ability to promote a field in the bottom to the top level table, but it is something that we've talked about. So if that comes about, then any field that we'd had is like, hey, we know that this is other information, but we don't normally store it in the table, would likely be able to be promoted up into the table. Can't promise on when that's going to be, but I know that that's something that's been requested for other items that we have down in fields. So I imagine that's going to be coming up in our near-term roadmap of items to look at.
So I have some basic product questions, which is the new version, is NK7, is the only version you can buy this NK and the NCASE Deluxe? Because I'd like to talk about the mobile device stuff, but before I get into that, is there different versions of NCASE Forensic, or is NCASE Forensic Deluxe going to be going forward? That's the version you get.
Let me tell you.
Maybe.
Do you want me?
Why don't you go ahead, Ashley, and then maybe I can add it.
Okay, let me talk about the modules first, and then I can let Steve.
Yeah, because there's like the Pro Suite. It sounds like Pro Suite's going away as a separate thing. Yes. It's being rolled in. So I guess I'm asking some basic marketing questions at this point.
Yeah, so the modules themselves. So previously in version 6, you had EDS, PDE, VFS, Fastblock SE, and like the CD-DVD. So CD-DVD is going to be going away. I don't think many people, if any, were using it at this point. But the other modules, EDS, VFS, PDE, and smartphone, and the Fastblock SE will all just be included with version 7. So you won't have to purchase those separately. In addition, the smartphone functionality from our
Neutrino
product, so that's going to be Android support, iOS, the Palm WebOS, BlackBerry, Windows Mobile, and Symbian. Those operating system-based phones, you will be able to acquire and process, so they'll be indexed and be able to be searched right along with everything else in your case, is also included with version 7.
Great.
That's super.
So you don't have to spend extra to get the smartphone functionality?
No.
Okay.
That's going to be included.
But do you have to have it other additional hardware in order to do that, though?
No, you don't need additional hardware, with the exception of if you don't actually have a cable for that phone. So right. Most of those phones are micro USB, mini USB, the iPod cable that everyone has.
Yes.
So we will sell that package if you happen to not have that cable. But for most people, we know you guys already have probably 10 of each sitting around somewhere in your house.
You don't need the actual Neutrino kit in order to be able to deal with the smartphones. Right.
So is there just one version of Encase Forensic then? Because I'm looking at the website and it says buy Encase Forensic Deluxe, including Encase Smartphone Examiner, for the price of the standard edition. So I guess my question is there going to be a standard edition with all the stuff in it and then a deluxe edition with smartphone, or is it just one edition?
It's going to be just one edition.
Okay.
There's just going to be, Ashley mentioned, all those modules, you know, the deluxe, it just didn't, you know, there's really no, it makes sense to try to keep that going on since all the modules are included.
All right. So the mobile device, this is, I haven't used Neutrino before, and here's what you guys are going to run into. There's a lot of competition now in the mobile device space. So one of the questions that you'll get, one of the questions I'll ask you, which is, why would I use Encase version 7 as opposed to some of the specific tools that people have been developing to work specifically for smartphones like Blacklight, Lantern, Cellebrite, all that? What's your pitch why yours is special compared to your competition?
Steve, do you want to take it or you want me to?
Well, I mean, I think...
take it if you want.
I'll give my answer and then Ashley can add. But I think our approach really, when we looked at, let's talk about Neutrino for a minute. So that product was released a few years ago, and there people feel the way they feel about it. And we actually just are now starting to transition away from that product. So that product will no longer be sold. So in case Neutrino is going away. But what we're doing is our kind of approach to the mobile device market is really to focus on these smartphones and the tablets, devices that have operating systems. And what we wanted to do is to make that the ability to acquire from those devices just part of Encase. So if you happen to run across one that you need to acquire, it's just simple, right? It's just easy. It's already there. It's part of Encase. You didn't have to pay extra for it. And you can add that to your case. So of course there are products that, you know, that's all they do and that's all their development is focused on. So, you know, maybe they can do things that we cannot do, but our kind of value of the smartphone acquisition is it's just included. So that's essentially it. And maybe Ashley can add more.
Yes, I would like to add more. So another portion of it is that we're really focusing on just the smartphones and we test every operating system version that comes out on the smartphone set that we have. So I know a common problem right now when you're working with those other tools is they say they have support for BlackBerry, but they're not very specific about operating system. They're not very specific about artifacts because they don't necessarily test every version with all the functionality. And we don't want to go down that route. Like when we're in R&D, when we work on a new feature, we really want to make sure we've tested the hardware and the software combination that users are expecting us to support. We want to be very specific about that. And, you know, we are focusing on a very limited set of phones, you know, those six operating systems that I mentioned. And so we're able to do a much better job of doing in-depth testing of those artifacts. Now, we are limited on some of the phones to a logical acquisition currently. So things like iOS devices, right now we're kind of doing a similar protocol to the iTunes backup. And we'll continue to work with Apple on improving that. But we will work with other tools that have got, I know there's a UK tool, the name is now escaping me, that does iPhone forensic images, full images. And I believe they do some jailbreaking to be able to get that image. So we won't do the jailbreaking.
Exam.
Yes, that is it. Yeah. So as a company, we're not going to go down the jailbreaking route. That's not our thing. But we will certainly ingest those images because once it's an image, all it is kind of an HFSX slightly altered table at the front that then we can then parse. So focusing really deeply on testing support for those operating systems. Operating systems are things we're very good at handling. We have lots of expertise, years of experience with development in them. And you know, we want to be able to be very accurate with what we say we support. So if we say we support BlackBerry operating system X for BlackBerry messages, instant messages, email, contacts, when you connect that phone, you should expect to get what we say we get from that phone. That's where we want to be able to differentiate, is really making sure that we're giving you that confidence that when you collect it, you're not going to have to connect it to like four more tools to see if you can get a comprehensive list.
Okay.
Right.
So I've got a couple of questions for you now then, based on the mobile mm-hmm. stuff and possibly mm-hmm. beyond that. So you mentioned Android phones.
Yep.
Will Encase version 7 support like the YAFS and YAFS 2 file systems?
I don't know what we've updated for 7.01 with Android support. We have a lot of changes coming up for Android in 7.02.
Right.
We looked in 7.01 at being able to support location-based data across all the smartphones. So when you're acquiring an image of a BlackBerry or an iPhone, being able to get like the XF data out of pictures, and being able to, if they've done maps, being able to get the location data out of the maps to be able to route those locations for you and have those, you know, resolve onto something like Google Earth. Or we've also found one that doesn't require you to connect to the internet to be able to see some of that. So I know we focused on that for 7.01, and the other Android pieces are coming up, I believe, in 7.02 or 7.03. So not a specific answer, I guess, but it is something that we're looking at, I guess, is the detail that I have at this point on that.
Okay, cool. And the other thing is that not just in the, you know, the smartphones, but also in regular computer use now, we're seeing a lot of SQLite databases being used. Cool. Is there going to be any built-in functionality to deal with those type of files?
Yes. This is something that's also coming in like a 7.02, because it wasn't an architectural change. I didn't actually push to get it into 7.01, and I want a little more time for us to really solidify it. But in 7.02, kind of doing a view file structure type operation on SQLite databases, as well as blist files from Macs. Nice. Those are all coming.
Superb.
Now that you're switching over to version 7, or you will be, do you have any sense of when the ENCE and, for example, in your training will make the switch to version 7?
So as soon as version 7 releases, the training department will be teaching courses in version 7. My understanding from training is they expect to have the ENCE updated within 6 months of release.
Okay, that's fair.
One other thing training's working on is a kind of a transition, since we do have, obviously we have lots of folks that use version 6, so it's going to be an offering to transition the people specifically, you know, from how you did something in 6, how you would now do something in 7. So more details will be available shortly on that, but yeah, they're heads down working on their updating their content for sure.
Will that be available the transition class, do you think?
I don't know exactly the details. I believe that they're considering that as kind of like an on-demand type of a
course. It'd be helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, last I talked to Dave Arnett, who's our director of training curriculum, it is planned to be an on-demand offering called Encase Essentials. And it won't have any of the forensic piece to it. It's just a, you know, here's how you did it in 6. Here's how you do it in 7, and here's how to leverage all the new great things in 7. Because
that'd
the
be
way
fantastic. I know that my team would like that.
As efficient, yeah. And we know that, you know, people don't have training budget to travel, but sometimes they have the ability to set aside time to do training. So we wanted to make sure that was available.
So I just got a couple more questions for you, and then I don't know if Eric has any more or anything, but. We talked a little bit about the amount of RAM that we needed, and you know, if you had an SSD drive, it would make more use of that. What about multi-core systems? In previous versions of Encase, we've seen, you know, for example, I've got a dual quad-core machine at work, which I use, and I would love to be able to, you know, this new evidence processor, just whack it in and say, right, all 8 cores go at mm-hmm. it and handle the data. Has that been incorporated into version 7?
Yes. So version 7 has been, you know, we're looking at utilization both of memory processing and, you know, IO in general. So we still see that you're not using as much processors as you would maybe expect. We're utilizing them, but we're still IO and memory bound on indexing. And those are really the intensive operations. So the answer is yes, we will utilize them if we need them, but usually that's not the place where we need more resources.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
So if I get this, if I think this through my head properly, if you had like a large RAID with multiple disks that you were working off inside mm-hmm. your forensic machine, that's going to benefit you considerably more than having a multi-core system.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting news. Mm-hmm. I just had to rebuild a RAID at work because my disks failed. So, I'll reset it up the other way then. Brilliant. The other thing is that we talked about reporting, we talked about email, but we didn't talk about the two of them together. Now, that's the one thing which has caused me to swear under my breath and bash my head off the desk on several occasions, is that previous versions of Encase, just the support for reporting what's found in email is, to be honest, it's not good. Has that been significantly, the reporting of emails, has that been significantly improved in this next version?
I say yes. Of course, here's the thing with the email reporting. That's the one area that we're still kind of putting in front of some of our test users and going, hey, does this make sense to you? Is this what you're looking for? It's been hard to get. We know that it was not what you wanted. That was very clear. It was very easy to get. We don't like this. It was harder to get consensus on what you did like to see in email. So we have done our best to be able to show you email in the way that we think you want to see it in the reports, and the ability to customize how you see emails in the reports. Do you want to see just a table that has subject to from with sent times? Or do you want to see the full email, have the option to do one or both? You know, we kind of tried to let you have more flexibility in what you wanted to see. But we're still kind of customizing and looking at how we're going to in our template that we distribute, display email so that it meets up with what we believe users want in that area. So I will be happy to get your feedback once the email report is out. If you're free. So, yeah.
You know, that's the one thing, is that everyone's very, very keen to point out what the bad things are in a product, but they're never very keen to point out how it could be made better. Yes. So, I mean,
well, and sometimes you just don't know. It's more, well, this isn't what I'm looking for, and I'm not quite sure, but this definitely isn't it. So, you know, and there's always the person A wants it without, person B wants it with. You know, we want to give people options, but not so many that they don't know how to make it work. So,
fantastic. I don't know if Eric, do you have anything else to?
No, I don't. I'm really looking forward to this new version, especially the getting away from the memory-based stuff. And then I use it. It's my primary file system forensic tool, and I'm one of those people who don't use it for email. I'm looking forward to being able to take another shot at that. And I like the fact that you're integrating the smartphone. It doesn't have to be the best tool out there. I don't think there is a best tool out there. It's just nice to have another solid tool available, because with mobile devices, you can't just rely on one tool. So actually having you guys, you know, entering this arena and putting a lot of developmental work into it is very welcome. So I'm glad to hear that. I encourage you to keep plowing forward with it. And I'm very much looking forward to the new version.
And we're definitely looking forward to getting users' feedback. The preview that you can sign up for on our version 7 page, you know, it's not just presentations that are going out. We're also going to be providing, if you have a valid V6 dongle and you sign up, you can go ahead and get a version 7 preview of the software as soon as that's released, which is going to be coming up shortly. So, you know, I encourage people to sign up for that. We have a forum already set up that questions are already coming in. You know, I saw the preview presentation. How's this going to work? And, you know, as soon as that software comes out, I'm sure it's going to fill up even more. But I'll be looking there for feedback from you guys. You know, hopefully, you know, are we on the right track? What we can do now that you see the new flow through the product, what you guys want added next. You know, I think we've provided a lot of new structure to help narrow down what you're looking for. And now we just want to, you know, continue to build the relationships between what you found of interest and other artifacts on the system.
Ashley, if I can just ask you one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you've taken the development lead on this for version 7. So what is your favorite change or your favorite new thing in version 7 that, you know, you take particular pride in?
I definitely think the search results all being on one page across everything and being able to. So my favorite thing is the thing that I keep pushing is the building of relationships on that tab. So when I find, you know, I'm viewing all documents, for instance, across emails, they could be attachments of emails, they could be on the file system, and I find one that I like, being able to right click on it and say find related items by hash value, name, date, then that really to me helps the investigator find context for the item that they're looking at, as well as show intent for how that got there. You know, and I just feel like it's those types of changes where, of course, you could have wrote another search to say, okay, well, here's the hash of this. Is it anywhere else on the disk? Or here's the name of this file. Tell me if it's anywhere else on the disk. You could do that. But I'm really proud that we can help make that just a part of the process. It's right there. You don't have to write it yourself. We can start help building those relationships for you. You know, you still get to do the investigative work, but to the extent that it's possible, we're able to provide you tools that make that easier.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Right. So, Steve, if people want to see more, where can they do it and when?
Yes. So we are actually, we're in the middle of this sneak peek tour, I'll call it. And we started in Washington, D.C. in March. This coming week, we'll be in Boston and New York at the end of the week. There's actually an event in Liverpool on the 14th. There's a page, if you go to the Guidance Software website and go to NCASE Forensic, you can get to the V7 page. And what I really like is that we are focused and dedicated to getting out in front of the community with this release, because as Ashley said, we want feedback. You know, we really want people to sign up for the preview. We're taking a lot of suggestions during these meetings. And we've probably been in front of 400 or 500 people already, and I'm hoping to get a lot more. So we're looking to add new dates, but we're going to be in Chicago on the 26th, in Salt Lake City on the 3rd of May. We have a couple of dates set for June, Atlanta and Charlotte. But I'm also looking for other venues, and I put it out through Twitter. I'm really, you know, I've kind of been charged with getting out in front of the community, and I'm psyched. It's been great. Got to meet a lot of people, and kind of, I think, as Ashley mentioned a while, you know, earlier in our conversation, that there's the perception that Guidance was just kind of abandoning the forensic market. And this is our opportunity to kind of show the community that we're here, we're there, we're listening, we're doing a lot of work for them. So I think this is really exciting. It's a good time. It's going to be a really busy year for me. I'm racking up the frequent flyer miles, which is fine by me. But so go to the Guidance Software website. You can go to the forensic page. You'll see the upcoming dates. And if anyone would like for us to come to your neck of the woods, absolutely. Let me know. Let us know. You just reach out to us or to Lee or Eric, and we'll see if we can get that set up for you.
Fantastic. Something just clicked in my head. I have to ask a question of Ashley just very quickly, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Tableau Imager.
Mm-hmm.
Images disks incredibly quickly compared mm-hmm. with other forensic tools. Has any of that been incorporated in the new version of NCASE?
So The Tableau Imager and the Encase Imager in 6.16 and higher are multi-threaded, and that's why they're so fast.
Right.
So they, both the Encase Imager and the Tableau Imager, are very fast in their current form, faster than the other tools out there.
Yep.
So our Imager in version 7 is going to be the multi-threaded, extremely fast imaging that you can now expect from us. The functionality, the additional functionality that's in the Tableau Imager is being moved over into the version 7 imaging process. And so you're going to start to see some of those pieces like queuing up acquisitions. But in general, speed-wise, yes, 7 is going to be the multi-threaded fast imaging that we have currently, actually.
Fantastic.
Have you used the 6.16 or higher imager in Encase?
Honestly, no.
Okay. Yeah, we did. Okay. And experience-wise, was that about comparable to what you were seeing in Tableau?
Yes.
Okay, great. So yeah, we we looked at the image speed. Also for compression, I don't know how many of your users we're seeing compression speeds were really slow with the old version. We've updated it to BZIP2 with version 7. And so compression will not only be faster, but much more effective. So if that's also a concern, that's going to be in 7.01.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Well, I don't know if you two have anything else to share with us specifically. if we've missed anything that you want to discuss or anything like that.
Well, I would just like to say, we definitely appreciate the chance to talk to you guys and get, again, get the word out about 7. We're really excited about it internally, and the feedback that we're getting from some of the different presentations we already made is positive. So I think, again, just really appreciate it. There's a lot more that we could talk about. I mean, we didn't even touch on the fact that at the same time we're releasing version 3 of Encase Forensic, there's going to be an Encase Portable version 3, which has some really cool stuff coming. Maybe we can save that discussion for another day.
But, All right. You're definitely welcome back anytime, especially you, Steve, as you were very quiet.
I like having Ashley here. I just kind of kick back. I'm just enjoying the show. It's great.
Are you guys saying I talk a lot?
No, you just know you have all the answers.
Anyway.
Cool stuff. All right. Well, thank you very much, guys, for coming on. Really, really appreciate that. I hope it's been beneficial to everyone. I assume that as more features are included in this, you'll probably discuss them at like CEIC and whatnot, will you?
Yes, we're going to be talking, very in-depth at CEIC. We have a whole lab track, as I was mentioning earlier, at CEIC on version 7. Well, we'll go through, exactly what's included in the processor and exactly how you use the new searching of the index. So you can see a lot more information at CEIC. But we're also going to try and provide some WebExes, or not WebExes, but videos to be able to kind of feature some of the new features as we get closer to release.
Yeah, one of the things I'll mention too is I started a series a few weeks ago, and it's on Twitter. It's Forensic Friday is the hashtag. And each week we're I'm just writing up a real short description of a new feature. So far we've talked about the interface, the processor, and searching. And then next week I have another topic on deck. So that's one place we'll get some information. As Ashley mentioned, more videos and things will be pushed out. We just want to spread, get a lot of information out into our user base and just people that might be interested in what's coming on. So yeah, there'll be a lot more information out.
All right. Fantastic. Well, like I said, thank you very much for coming on. And I know that's just like a very brief overview of what we can expect in new version. But if anybody wants to know more, then they can go on, have a look on the Facebook page, or they can go to one of these previews, or even go to CEIC and go and sign up for the preview as well, because I'm sure that's only by using the new software you can actually find out exactly what it's fully capable of. But are people able to find you guys online? I know, Steve, you have a Twitter account.
Yeah, I'm Steve at Incase. That is me, and I'm on there pretty frequently.
I don't have a Twitter account yet. Well, I have a personal Twitter account. I don't have a guidance Twitter account yet. So I will probably be connecting into that shortly. But they can reach me at my email, which is Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-Y, Stockdale, S-T-O-C-K-D-A-L-E, at ncase.com. So it actually is Ashley.Stockdale at ncase.com.
Okay, cool stuff. And Eric, we all know where we can find Eric these days, but he's been pruning his Twitter list. And so,
yeah, ericjhuber.com is the website, and that goes to the blog. And then my AFOD blog is actually the public Twitter account, because it didn't make any sense. I had the Eric J. Huber account, which I had hundreds of people on there. I had no idea who they are. And when I wanted to post something, Digital Forensics, well, they put it on both. And I always feel guilty because I'd be tweeting about what your boss was eating, you know, Simon Stegels or J. Michael's new barbecue idea, or, you know, football. I'm like, oh man, I lose half my followers anyway. So, like, all right, I'll turn that one into a private one where I'll just, you know, do my ritualized Lee Whitfield abuse with a handful of people, and then I'll make sure that I'll make the blog one the public one, and I won't feel bad.
All right. Just one last item before we wrap up, and that is, don't forget that the nominations for the Forensic Forecast Awards are still open. And it looks as if that's going to be happening at the SANS Forensic Summit in Austin, Texas in June this year, the presentation of the awards. So, yeah, if you're going there, then we'll hope to see you there. And get on, do some nominating. Nominations close the beginning of May, and then the voting will start shortly thereafter. So do it. Do it now, or I'm going to come find you. But yeah, that's all we have for you this week. It's been a pleasure, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now. This podcast is brought to you in part by Disc Labs, offering a range of services such as forensic data recovery, digital forensics, and certified data erasure. Find out more at disclabs.com.